Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Hat Day on Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. Stacy Trusanko's here this hour. Steve Ray, he wears a tour guide hat. I don't know what to call that. It's not quite a pith helmet, but it's a traveling hat. And Dr. Stacy Trusanko's wears her cowgirl hat. And now we are ready for your faith and science questions with the Texas accent. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Whatever your faith and science question is, whether it's for yourself or for someone else, Dr. Stacy is here to take it. Dr. Stacy Trusankos, as I always introduce her, scientist and theologian, but soon to make my life more difficult, scientist, theologian, and philosopher, working on her graduate degree in philosophy right now. Dr. Stacy Trusankos, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me back on. I appreciate it.
We love it when you're on, and we love it when people call with their faith and science questions. It's strange that the Catholic Church, which has been devoted to learning and science for all this time, one of the number one obstacles to people accepting the Catholic faith, for some reason, is science.
It's kept me so busy, and I'm very grateful for it. But it's kept me busy and up late at night thinking about how do we take this beautiful philosophy from the wisdom of the Catholic Church and the theology, kind of like Aquinas did, and marry it with the modern science that we have today. I see that there's a lot of work to be done there. And I'm just very excited to be working on it and teaching about it. I teach a lot of classes to students at Catholic universities about faith and science and philosophy and the intersection of those three things.
Well, there may be, but I'm not aware of a large community of PhDs in the hard sciences. Your PhD, of course, is in chemistry, and who also have graduate degrees in theology and philosophy. And so I would assume that puts you in great demand. I mean, are you doing this kind of thing a lot?
Yeah, I am trying to focus my life more lately. So I do a lot of talks and I'm working on books and writing, but trying to free up to have time to focus on this a lot more. So yeah, it's what I do every day, all day, whether it's speaking or writing or teaching. And I love doing it. I do it all from my home in Texas. So I feel very blessed to have found my way in the world as a Catholic woman doing this.
888-318-7884 is the number if you'd like to talk with Dr. Stacy Trusankos about the intersection of faith and science, whatever your question is. If it's for you, that's fine. If it's for someone else, that's fine. If you are a believer, you're very welcome here. If you are not a believer, you are very welcome here. As a matter of fact, Dr. Stacy loves talking with non-believers about these things. Your journey, Dr. Trusankos, has been the fact that the beauty of science drew you towards the questions that brought you to God. It's not that it was, at least the way I understand your story, it's not a direct science proves God. That's not the story. It's more that your study, your work with trying to explain photosynthesis and whatnot as a chemist led you to questions that led you to God.
Yes, as a scientist, you're supposed to ask why. Why do things happen? And you're supposed to seek answers and gather data and form theories. And I felt like I never let myself ask the biggest why of all about what's the basis of existence? Where did it all come from? I didn't even have the language to ask those kind of questions, to even say what grants everything its existence and its essence. And, you know, those are all new words to me in philosophy. But I still nevertheless knew it had to come from somewhere. You can't look at the world with this much intelligibility and order and not wonder why it's all there in the first place and what your role is in it, because we're part of that great big universe. And science alone just does not answer those kind of questions. And I think the older I got, the more I had children and just trying to develop my relationships in my life, I just wanted answers like that. And it led me to the Catholic Church. They're doing the best work to find these answers.
But, and you didn't feel you had to turn off your brain. Like some people were like, no. Well, if you want faith, you got to turn off your brain. That's not what happened to you.
No, I mean, if you want to hurt your brain, if you want real brain pain, just read Aquinas. I mean, it is understandable, but it takes a lot of work. And when you learn these new truths about existence and about creation and how everything's coming from God and being drawn back to God, and the language for expressing doctrine like the Holy Trinity and the Incarnation, every time you learn something new like that, it's very exciting. And it always fits together with something else you learned. Like, you're just putting these puzzle pieces together on this great big truth, which you'll never know all of it in your lifetime. But every time you see something new and learn something new and see how it fits in, it's the most exciting thing in the world. I mean, yeah, I'm getting older, but I feel younger than ever because I'm so excited to be learning these things. I mean, I understand chemistry now, I understand why I love atoms so much. And I wake up every day thinking, what am I going to learn next?
888-318-7884. If you'd like to talk with Dr. Drasenkos about these topics, we would love to have you here. One thing I didn't mention, I think the book that really got people paying attention was Particles of Faith. Are mm-hmm. you still writing? Are there more books coming?
Yes.
What's happening?
I'm still writing. I took a little bit of a break because I was doing some bioethics work for a while. But the reason I'm back to working on a PhD in philosophy is to feed my writing so that I can write with some authority on the science and the philosophy and theology, and that I'll have an interaction with the scholarly community to be doing that. But I don't want to just be a scholarly writer. I want to master the scholarship, but I want to communicate it. It shouldn't be boring. It's not boring. And not that all scholars are boring, but, you know,
most are.
We don't.
Oh, sorry.
Did I say
that out loud? I beg your pardon.
I challenge myself to be able to explain things in a better way. And I just want to say something to Catholic Answers and to you, Cy. Thank you for what you do. I had an experience recently. I went to, unfortunately, the funeral of my dad's aunt and his uncle first and then his aunt later. And at the funeral in Dallas, Texas, a relative on his side named Nancy, and her husband's name is Brett, came up to me at the funeral after it was over and the family was visiting. So these are distant family members in Dallas. They recognized me from being on the show, Catholic Answers, because they watch it and listen to it every day. Her job in Dallas is to drive around to different school districts and help them with their supplies. And so she listens to Catholic Answers every day. And that was just a really neat experience. These two people, flesh and bone, right in front of me, were so grateful for what Catholic Answers does.
Oh, thanks for sharing that with us.
It was nice.
That's very nice.
It was nice.
Nobody ever
Shout
recognizes
Shout out to Nancy
me.
And Brett.
Thanks, Nancy and Brett, especially Nancy. 888-318-7884 is the number if you want to talk with Dr. Stacy Drasenkos about the intersection of faith and science. We'll start in Texas with Gabriel.
Yeah.
Gabriel, Texas, the Republic of Texas. All right, Gabriel, go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Drasenkos.
Dr. Stacy Drasenkos, I don't know if you remember, you spoke a while back, and I asked you for empirical, objectively verifiable, observable, repeatable, testable evidence that your God is real, and you gave me an argument of incredulity and a question-begging fallacy. And I would like to know if, you know, you were able to rethink your answer and, you know, give me one that doesn't include faith and the fine-tuning argument or argument of irreducible complexity for your deity.
Did you get it all?
I think I got it. You want to know if there's empirical evidence in biochemistry for God. Is that right?
Correct. And don't give me any logical fallacies like you did before.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
well,
you think
knocked
I
that
gave
off,
you a
Stacey.
I'm so sorry. I don't think that I gave you a logical fallacy before, because I said that everything in science is like inductive empirical evidence pointing to something beyond science. That's not a logical fallacy. I'm actually logically trying to stay in the category of what we're trying to explain. So if you're thinking about God is that there is some physically discoverable truth in natural science, biochemistry, like if we're going to study the cell long enough and we'll find God waving at us, and I know you don't mean it like that, but that we'll study cells and atoms and biochemistry enough that we will have objective evidence in the science deductively that proves God exists. That's not what science is doing. It's the same kind of mistake categorically as if my son dug through his spaghetti and meatballs trying to find proof that mom exists. Just because I made the dinner doesn't mean he's going to find me literally in the dinner. To ask that question is to ask a question that can't be answered with logical consistency, because it doesn't make any sense. So what I say about biochemistry, and I went and grabbed my book here. I love to look through this book, and it's a college-level biochemistry written by Vogt and Vogt, Donald and Judith, a married couple. It's full of amazing detail of order that is intelligible to us to discover as human beings about how carbon atoms and oxygen atoms and everything that makes up the macromolecules and proteins that run living things, that are the material cause of living things. It's full of details like that. But to call the only kind of evidence that can be as proof that God exists is inductive proof. It points to the existence of God. If you don't want to ask questions about what caused it all, if you don't want to ask questions about where it came from, like I was with my blinders on, not willing to ask the bigger questions, you're never going to find the answer. So you have to be willing to ask the right kind of question, Gabriel. And that's, you know, if you think I'm committing a logical fallacy, because I won't commit a logical fallacy the way I understand inductive and deductive evidence, then we need to have a much longer conversation. I know you weren't satisfied before, and I'm sorry about that. And that's why I devote so much time to working on this stuff, because it's just a fundamental, fundamental, deeply flawed understanding, honestly, of logic itself.
Okay, but I felt that the last time we spoke, you said that you saw the sign and the chemicals that you made for a living, and that is an argument of incredulity.
Because I saw the sign.
No. You didn't have any other way that you can think about it. You said, how can you not believe that there's a designer behind these chemicals?
Right. And that was photosynthesis. So I did have that moment as a non-religious chemist working in a state-of-the-art laboratory trying to reproduce photosynthesis. And it hit me hard when I looked out the window one day and noticed the trees, and I realized that the photosynthetic process, which is only one process among many happening in the thylakoid membrane of the cells of the trees, when it hit me all that's going on there, that's just happening, that we study and try to elucidate and try to understand so we can take it into the lab and try and repeat it and fail so miserably at getting little tiny things at the nanoscale level to do what we want them to do, it hit me that if we're trying to artificially do something, where did the first instance of photosynthesis come from? Who is holding photosynthesis in order? What is? I don't think I said who at first. I think I wondered, you know, like, where did it all come from? And I started searching and reading. I mean, if you read the ancient Greek philosophers, they were asking the same kind of questions. They were deducing that God must exist, which we can deduce that God must exist. But if you're going to use science, you're not going to get a deductive argument. You're going to get an inductive argument. You're going to look at things and say, there must be a God. I can form this bigger conclusion of something beyond science. You can deduce that science isn't the answer to everything. And that's what I was saying. I think I had 1 minute left in the show the last time you called.
I'm glad we had more time. Mm-hmm. Gabriel, I'm glad that you call when Dr. Stacy is on. Darren, I want to ask you a question before I go to the break. The Philosophy for the People, the name of the who's the guy? What's that?
Patrick Flynn.
I don't know why Pat Flynn's name went out of my head. Gabriel, I just want to suggest it to you because Pat does a very fine job as a philosopher dealing with just exactly the question and that you were posing to Stacy. So just in addition to the conversation we just had and to the conversations I hope we have in the future, I hope you'll check out Pat Flynn, Philosophy for the People, and just see the work that he's doing there. I have to take the break, however. I went late. We'll be right back with more questions on faith and science with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Is prayer powerful? St. Alphonsus Liguori put it this way, he who prays will be saved. He who does not pray, well, you get the point. Prayer can bring us salvation. It's the means of putting us into communion with God, and God can do all things. The more our will lines up with the will of God, the more powerful our prayers, and the simpler they become ultimately, be it done to me, Lord, according to thy word. That's the prayer God will always answer.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. All you, there's all these connections. I didn't know Pat Flynn, that you know of Pat Flynn from Dr.
Yes.
Gavin Kerr, who is on Pat Flynn's show all the time, and he's your PhD advisor. Small world.
Like he was Carlo Broussard's PhD advisor.
Wow. That's really cool. I just love the way Pat Flynn talks. I was saying to you at the break, I think you're very similar. You've both been on both sides of this. Neither of you is at all combative. You're just trying to help people, see it. That's all.
Gabriel, Pat's great.
Yeah, he is.
Second that recommendation. He's great.
Right. He's also in the best shape of any Catholic apologist on the earth. We all agree Pat Flynn is in the best shape because he's some kind of, I don't want to say nut, but he's a nut. All right, Robert in Cincinnati, Ohio, you are next. Robert, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Glad you're here, Robert. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
I've been thinking about artificial intelligence lately. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have. And I don't think of it as a person, but if artificial intelligence had free will, could people blame it for things? I think people want to put the blame on it because they can't anticipate what it's going to come up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll take that in two parts. Are you done? I don't want to cut you off. Okay. I'll take that in two parts. Like, if AI had free will, so first of all, could AI have free will? And the answer to that is no. It's going to be a no, that it can't have free will the way we talk about free will as it relates to humans and as it relates to God. We're made in the image and likeness of God. We have the powers of intellect and will because we're made in God's image. We have the ability to think and to make choices, and that's a spiritual power. It's not something that is reducible to our matter. It's not reducible to our brain. Our intellect and will work with our bodies. We're all one person, but we don't. The kind of free will there is a spiritual power. So AI can never have spiritual powers because it's not spiritual. So it can't have free will in that sense. Now, it certainly seems to have free will because we can ask it a question and we're not sure what it's going to say. And we're being asked in this day and age to trust AI with what it tells us. But those are algorithms that are designed by people with free will that goes out and gathers. It's like Google search engine on steroids. It's a massive, much the next level search engine. And so it's going to go out and find answers. And really the questions we need to be asking about that are, can we trust the answers that it gives us? Because it could summarize false information and give us false information. So it could only seem to have free will. It could never actually have free will. So if it seems to have free will, could it be blamed? You might need to correct me on this part of the question. Could it be blamed? So does that alleviate us of any responsibility for our own choices? I think it doesn't. Maybe it mitigates it sometimes. If, you know, my child looked up something and got an AI answer and came and talked to me about it and it was wrong, I would still hold my child accountable for not doing his own homework and looking up the answer himself. So I think there's partial blame in the sense that it would be an algorithm that we have to decide whether we trust or not. And sometimes we might place our trust wrongly on free will, on the AI.
Did that get to what you were looking for, Robert?
Very much, but still, I am Catholics think of a person, and so free will is not a free will is spiritual. A person is spiritual, right?
Partly.
Yes. Spiritual and bodily.
Okay. Okay. Well, I appreciate your answer.
Robert, thank you for the call. Are you getting more AI questions? We're getting more AI questions. Are you, Stacy?
Yes, and I think we're all right to be thinking about it because it is propaganda is going to take on a whole new meaning with AI.
I like AI personally because I don't have that much eye, and so it fills in a lot of the stuff that my eye doesn't know about because I need more of the AI in my eye.
Yeah. The Pontifical Academy of Sciences, I like the way they put it in one of their meetings on robotics and artificial intelligence back in 2017. But they said that AI is made in the image and likeness of humans.
That's it.
But we are made in the image and likeness of God. So we have free will and intellect like God does. AI only has an artificial version of free will and intellect.
Yeah. The problem with human beings is we have a tendency to put things that are lower than us in the position of the one who's higher than us. And so we start.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But that's what we do.
Upside down.
Right. Well, that we are upside down. 888-318-7884 is the number. Chris is in Columbus, Ohio. I wonder if he gets comments on that. Chris in Columbus, listening on 820 AM. I don't know. Just when I see it in print, maybe it's different than when people say it, Chris, in Columbus.
What's that about the physicist?
Oh yeah, you can talk to the physicist. Yes, she's here. I was just commenting that your name is Chris and you live in Columbus because.
Oh, Chris in Columbus. Yeah.
Sorry, it was meaningless. But go ahead with your.
It is Chris. Christopher also.
Oh, Christopher! Yeah. Christopher in Columbus. Go ahead with your question for Stacy in Texas.
Yeah, I've always had a question about a Jesuit priest from Belgium whose calculations as a physicist are credited as being the man that discovered the Big Bang. So
yes.
I know that the church and they're all this just distance themselves from it, and the secular community has taken the Big Bang and just to disprove the creation. So I don't know. How does the church deal with something like that? I mean, you have your Jesuit priest, Georges Lemaître, I think his name was. He discovered the Big Bang. It's in his credit, and apparently Hubble is the one who confirmed it
exactly.
With the telescopes and the expansiveness of the universe. So I just wonder how does. I mean, back in the day, I know I think the church was trying to take credit for it or to prove, you know, to integrate it into its doctrine, I guess. You know, they kind of stopped. I think the secular community just took it over. And and they just kind of, you know, they kind of separated on that. But it's still, to me, it's just, you know, I think that having a Jesuit priest discover that, I think, you know, like I say, if there is a God, he has a tremendous sense of humor. Because I just think that's a huge irony to me to have that. Those two connections, you know.
Well, let's let Stacy comment on that, and then I'll come back to Chris.
Chris in Columbus, that is a beautiful, beautiful thing that you bring up. And I want Catholics to know this so much. My chapter 4 in Particles of Faith is, does the Big Bang prove God? And I devoted it to that. This was in late 20s, 1930s. So it wasn't that long ago that Father Lemaître came up with this idea of a Big Bang. He didn't actually come up with the word Big Bang. Fred Hoyle came up with that later. But until that time, the prevailing cosmological theory was this steady state theory in which there was, it was from Einstein, and there was this zero density empty universe that was expanding. And so the universe was constantly expanding. It didn't have a beginning in time. And so here you have a Catholic priest who is a physicist and cosmologist. And he knows that there is a beginning in time because that's what he believes in faith. Yet there is this prevailing cosmological theory that doesn't acknowledge a beginning in time. He does his calculations, as you mentioned, Chris, and he posits a beginning in time, and it makes more sense of the data. And so he tries to push this forward, and it's met with great resistance. But he wasn't pushing his scientific theory forward because he had this need to prove that his faith was right with science, getting back to Gabriel's question. Father Lemaître knew better. He didn't do that. He said, it's separate. Let science discover what it discovers, but science here is consistent. And he actually advised the Pope, Pius XII, don't use this as proof for God's existence. Use it as a consistent, inductive proof.
Let's come back to this when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Deepen your connection to the Church's holy days and seasons while you draw on the wisdom of the Church Fathers. Feasts of Our Fathers, the new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, is a treasury of history, prayers, insights, and lessons that will bring you closer to the earliest of Catholic traditions. Take your prayer life and your solidarity with the Church, past and present, to a new level. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers today at shop.catholic.com.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the Church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the Church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's always great to have Dr. Stacy Trusenkos with us. One of the great conversations, one of the great opportunities really we have is to talk about the intersection of faith and science. And many people think that there's an inherent conflict. As a matter of fact, there's a thing called the conflict theory of faith and science. Mm-hmm. Basically a debunked theory, but it's one that many people think is still a big deal. I know that I don't like to insult those people, but they're stuck in the 19th century. Sorry, I shouldn't have said it that way. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is the author of Particles of Faith. She blogs or something at Substack. What do you do at Substack? I don't know what that's called. That's blogging, right?
I just write.
You write.
I think we just call it writing.
You write at Substack.
I write my Substack.
So if people want to read your writing, what do they have to look for?
StacyTresenkos.substack, or just search it, or you can search and find my website and find a link there. And the website is called God and Elements.
But it's
under my name. So I'm just writing about my philosophical work.
Well, we've got Chris on the line with us still in Columbus.
Chris.
And Chris, just wanted to point out that, and I do think this is an important thing to point out, that the person who originated what became known as the theory of the Big Bang was a Jesuit priest and physicist. And you were pointing out, and this is something that I've kind of learned from you, or it was articulated by you in ways that I understood it, that the faith actually does point us in the direction of the truth, and that's why you have these great, or it's part of why you have these great priest scientists, for example, like Gregor Mendel or Georges Lemaître, that there is actually something in the faith that pointed him in the right direction here. It didn't settle the science for him, but it pointed him in the right direction of where to look.
No, and Father Lemaître is to be applauded for keeping the two separate, because what you never want to do in science with data is impose a preconceived a priori worldview onto the data, because then you're being biased. And he didn't. He let the data speak for itself, and the data posited a beginning in time, or a Big Bang. Well, it's not really a beginning in time, but it's the start of what we know as the universe. And I love what he did with the Pope at the time. So he is in the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, and Pope Pius XII says it's the fiat lux, you know, it's the fiat of light, let there be light. And he says, this is the proof that we have long awaited for the existence of God from science. But Father Lemaître went to his advisor and said, basically, tell him to shut up. he said, tell him not to say that, because if there's ever scientific data that disproves the Big Bang, and there are scientists today working on other theories, if the scientific data ever leads us in a different direction, then what are people going to say? Oh, well, the science has now proven that God doesn't exist. So it's like I was saying to Gabriel before, you don't look for God's existence, the proof of it, in any single scientific theory. You deduce it with good philosophy and good logic. You can deduce that God must exist, and you can be led to the existence of God by looking at what's in nature, like it says in Romans, 1:21, that we can tell that God exists by looking at nature. And so Father Lemaître was very insistent that those two things stay separated. And after he talked to the Pope's advisor, the Pope never said that again. Instead, he praised philosophy for philosophy's sake and science for science's sake, and the freedom that the Catholic Church acknowledges the sciences should have. I think that's what a lot of people miss.
But Chris, I want to come back to you and see what you think of all that.
Oh, I'm just feeling very lucky that I finally found someone that can talk about this. Because, I discovered George a long time ago, and it seems like no one knows about this priest that basically discovered the Big Bang. And I was always wondering why, you know, the secular scientists and the faithful scientists couldn't bring this a little more together. It just seems like it's just going to be so separate. People that are faithful and people that aren't. And I think that's where the line is drawn. Like I said, I'm just fortunate. I really, really feel fortunate that I found somebody that can talk about this. Somebody that knew something anyway.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the call,
Chris.
I think it should be more. It should be more talked about.
That's Dr. Stacy's whole life. That's why you're singing her song right now. She has dedicated her life to getting people to talk about this, Chris. So hang on. I'll tell you what. We'll send you a copy of Jimmy Akin's book, A Daily Defense, if you'd like, just to say thanks for a great call and a great conversation. I will say I have many problems with the way things are phrased on Wikipedia, but Wikipedia has a wonderful page.
It does.
Of a list of Catholic clergy scientists, and they're just barely scratching the surface. And it's probably, I don't know, a few hundred. When you think about these Catholic priest scientists are not minor figures. When you think about Georges Lemaître, or I mentioned Gregor Mendel, and many, many others, these are people right at the heart of it. And that's where Christians belong, is at the heart of science, not off on the periphery somewhere. Chris, thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay, so Bill wasn't able to stay on the line. Is that what I'm, Bill from Jefferson Township, Pennsylvania?
Oh, sorry.
He couldn't stay on the phone there because are they rioting in Pennsylvania yet? No, not yet. Okay, could science? I'm sorry. Could science prove the existence of God? Have you read Peter? Oh, it's a series of questions. Have you read Peter Craft?
Yeah.
Are spirit and matter distinct and disconnected? Not in you, Bill.
No.
All right, go ahead, Stacey.
So
let's take those three.
So I think I already talked about the ways in which science can prove the existence of God. I actually teach college students about this, and we talk about the Big Bang. It's one reason I know so much about it, because I use that as an example of what science can and cannot prove about the existence of God. It's an inductive kind of proof. Have I read Peter Kraft? Yes, and I owe a lot of my interest in philosophy and theology to him. I have read him. What we talk about with spirit and matter, I'm not really sure what Bill, I wish he could be on the call. I'm not sure what he means about are they distinct and disconnected. The concept of hylomorphism is something I never heard outside of Catholic circles, and I'm just now getting my mind around what all it means. Hylomorphism is the idea, it started with Aristotle, it was developed by Aquinas, that everything that exists in the material world is both matter and form. It's a composite of matter and form. And so we are substances that are composites of matter and form. The matter is our body. The form is our soul, is the form of our body. And form is, and God creates things this way. And form is what grants the essence and the existence to us, made manifest in the matter. So they're not, speaking of them in terms of definitions, we talk about them as two different things. But they're not disconnected. That you can't have form without matter, and you can't have matter without form. There is something called prime matter, but it's only spoken of as something that is total potential, whereas form is total act. And in things that exist, they're composites. The form, the matter is disposed to the form, and the form grants to the matter what it is. So You can talk about those two things definitionally as different, but in everything that exists, everything that we study in science is a composite of form and matter. And so we study that form to figure out, when we study what the elements on the periodic table are, we're asking questions about the form of those elements. And we learn about the form by studying the matter of those elements.
Bill, I'm so glad we got the question. I'm sorry we didn't get to talk with you personally.
I'm sorry.
But thank you very much for the question. This is one of the things that I mean, this is where you just love being a Catholic, when you talk about the fact that we are hylomorphic creatures. There's just nowhere else that you're going to get that kind of talk, and it's the only thing that explains what we are. Because this,
yes.
A lot of people think that what Christians believe is that we have a soul in our body. And that's not what Christians believe. We don't have a soul in our body. We don't have a ghost floating around in us. We're hylomorphic. We are a single substance made of spirit and matter. That's a pretty good. I love being a hylomorph. I'm going to write a song about that. It's going to be called "I Love Being a Hylomorph." Yeah, that's it. I just decided.
Should be a hit.
You don't seem entirely enthusiastic.
No, I'm just thinking, how would Cy do this?
Well, you're just going to have to wait and see. Hang on, Adele. You're going to number two. We'll be right back with Dr. Stacey Trusenkos. We're talking faith and science. If you have faith and science questions, as you can tell, she has talked to believers. She has talked to non-believers. And whichever category you fit in, even if it's somewhere in between those, you are welcome to ask your faith and science question. 888-318-7884. I will just mention, we always get questions on evolution for Dr. Stacey. Not a single question on evolution yet today. Maybe you've solved it on your other appearances. People no longer have questions about the theory of evolution. Right back with more Dr. Stacey Trusenkos on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilino with a few words about St. Irenaeus.
It's only recently that Pope Francis has declared him to be a doctor of the church. And this is unusual because he's been dead for many centuries, almost two millennia. But I think he's a man for our time because he's teaching us to think, to have an educated faith, to know the reasons for what we believe, and then present those to a skeptical world.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Using a little AI in the studio, Darren is asking ChatGPT to write a song called I Love Being a Hylomorph. So we should get the lyrics soon from ChatGPT. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, our guest, and you're welcome to call Particles of Faith, one of her books. That's not the only book, but certainly I think that's your most popular book. Is that your most famous book? Particles of Faith?
I think so. Yeah. The other one is Behold It Is I, which I looked at some Eucharistic miracle investigations. Yeah. But I want to do the sequel to Particles of Faith. It's going to be called Elements and Angels, Life Among the Invisible.
You can't see an atom. And yeah, you can't see an angel.
I think about invisible things all the time. And that's kind of my
They're invisible
existence.
For two different reasons. But nonetheless, both invisible.
Yes.
888-318-7884, the number. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist, theologian, and prospective philosopher. That will depend on the people at the university, whether they will confer that degree upon her. If you've got a question about faith and science, you're welcome to call. We were talking with Steve Ray last hour about kind of like pious myths about Scripture. And there are pious, I don't know if they're myths, mm-hmm. but ideas that people have about faith and science. And one of them, I want to just check it with you. This idea that came, we got it a few years ago and it's still hanging on, that at the moment of conception, there's some physical, visible flash of light, which I don't know, people take to be the ensoulment or what, but is that true? Does that really happen? What's that all about?
Yeah, thank you. I do get questions about that quite a lot. It really took hold. There was this scientific research where the scientists saw in the microscope this flash of light at the moment of fertilization. So at the moment when the sperm enters the egg, there was a flash of light. And that caught on. It was actually called the mini Big Bang. It was called the mini Fiat Lux, let there be light, at the moment of conception. And the same kind of advice that Georges Lemaître gave to the Pope back in the 1930s still applies now. And here's the myth part about it, though. There is no flash of light at conception. I mean, when you were conceived, when I was conceived, when my children were all conceived, there was no flash of light in my womb the moment that sperm entered egg and a new human being existed. It is wonderful. I'm not trying to take away from the awe and the wonder at all. But what happened in this one scientific paper, the scientific paper was called The Zinc Spark, something about the signature of human egg activation, a zinc spark. So what happens is, biochemically speaking, again, amazing, when that one winter sperm makes it into the egg, chemical changes start to happen in the egg. They do start to act in unison. And calcium starts to build up in the cell. The ion calcium, Ca2+, starts to build up in the cell, and it causes the zinc that's in the egg to flow out through the membranes. And so outside the egg, there will be a flow of zinc ions. Well, what the researchers did is they found this fluorescent tag. It's called fluzin. And they put it in the surrounding outside the egg. And whenever the zinc would flow out, it would bind to this fluorescent detector. And when they shine light on it, it would fluoresce and give this flash of light. So it was artificial. It was a chemical dye to be able to detect when the zinc flowed out. The zinc flows out at the moment of fertilization when the sperm makes it through. The zinc flows out, and they were just trying to see the zinc with this fluorescent tag. And so it was an artificial flash of light in the first place. That doesn't actually happen in the human womb. And it was only because of this fluorescent tag. So there is no miraculous flash of light at conception, but a lot of people, pro-life people with very good intentions, didn't get all of that. They just heard the part about there's a flash of light at the moment of conception, and they ran with it. And that's something that can be criticized it kind of makes you look like you need science to shore up your faith when you do that. So don't do that, because we don't need the fluorescent tag to tell us something miraculous happens at the moment of conception. That's something that good philosophy and theology already tell us.
Right. And the fact that at fertilization, we have a new creature. That part science had already well established a long, long time ago.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go to Bob in South Carolina. Bob, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trisankos.
Hi, Dr. Stacy. I am a devout Catholic. I am also an AI engineer. And I think there's very strong arguments that sentience can exist on silicone. Basically, if a single neuron can be modeled and our brain is a system of neurons, well, then so can the interaction of a system of neurons be modeled. We just need sufficient hardware. Furthermore, I don't see anything so special about carbon that it can have sentience as opposed to silicon.
Okay. How are you defining sentience?
Sentience meaning self-awareness, the ability to make rational decisions. Well, not just rational decisions, but the ability to feel and experience rather than just make predictions based on conditional probabilities.
Mm-hmm. And so actually
drive its own choices, but not only drive its own choices, feel the effects of its own choices, have feelings and emotions. And the scary part is, if sentience can exist in silicone, well, guess what? Then these transhumanists like Ray Kurzweil are correct that we can eventually be uploaded to servers. Now, you mentioned how AI can lead to dangerous propaganda. Think about the dangerous torture and suffering this can lead to.
Yes. But I agree with you that I'm familiar with Ray Kurzweil's singularity and his idea that we can be uploaded and become immortal in the silicon. I always thought it was kind of interesting, like your grandmother dies, but she's uploaded into his device. And then you ask this device, "Grandma, are you still alive?" And the device says, "Yes." How do you prove that really happened? I would love to hear more about what you're thinking, Bob, because I'm not an AI engineer, but I hear what you're saying. What I have a problem with is I think there could probably be neural systems there are already neural systems on silicon, the same as, you know, whatever element it is, whether it's silicon or carbon, but the system of the network that forms from that, it's still just material. To say that something spiritual like intellect and free will would arise, or sentience would arise, if you're talking about sentience meaning the same thing as intellect and free will, that would arise from that matter, then that's emergentism. That's saying that our souls emerge from our matter. It's a bottom-up proposition, and we don't do that as Catholics. The soul can't emerge from matter. That's to misunderstand what the soul is. So I don't see how AI could ever actually have intellect and free will in that sense. So sentience, that's why I ask you what you mean, because sentience can mean like consciousness too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And that's an excellent answer. So I mean, the thought experiment, though, in response to that would be our brains, our neurons, are constantly recycling atoms. They ingest atoms, they excrete atoms, and none of the same carbon atoms that form us now were part of our body 7 years ago. So if we get a neural chip, for example, and our neurons naturally degrade with age, and the chip takes over more and more of the function slowly, and eventually we have no neurons, so just the chip, and but we're still thinking and talking, would we say our soul transferred from the carbon to the silicon?
Wonderful question. I had never heard it that question. That's a wonderful question, Bob.
It is a wonderful question, Bob. And I tell students when we talk about things, just we don't spend a lot of time on it, but I tell them the reason that college students need to be learning about this stuff is because they're going to have to figure this out. It's probably going to fall to them to what to do when someone calls AI sentient and when it seems like it's sentient. And I'm thinking now of the brain organoid technology. There's a way that they can take stem cells and grow mini brains in the petri dish. So they can get the stem cells to do the same thing that a developing brain would do in an embryo in a dish. And they can do lots of mini organs this way. But the brain organs that they're growing in the dish, the scientists are actually starting to see different hemispheres of the brain form, and they're starting to connect them. And they're asking the same question, is that thing going to be sentient at some point? And what you're saying, Bob, the other thing it's making me think about, there has long been this question of how much of our body can we replace and still be us. Like, can you cut your arms off and put bionic arms on? Yeah. Can you do that with your legs? How far can you go? And I think that's a similar question to what you're asking with the brain slowly being replaced carbon for silicon. How far can you go before you have a brain functioning like it always did? Is the soul still there? And I don't think there is an answer to that question. So all I can really say there is I'm glad there are people like you doing what you do who are already thinking about it.
The minority. We're in the minority. Most of the people are secular. Many of them grew up Jewish. Anyone who discriminates against Jews, I'm not a fan of. My point is they don't have our worldview. And we're putting cameras everywhere. Priests are bringing their cell phones, their smartwatches, their iPads into the confessional. It's listening. Oh. We are not approaching this wisely as a church.
Wow, Bob, I'm so glad that you called. Like, those are things that I honestly hadn't thought of, and now they're going to make me miserable thinking about them. Thank you, Bob, for that. But those are important things to consider.
Yeah, right.
Because many people do have the experience, and I know that all the companies say, no, this is not true, but their cell phone listens to them, and or their Alexa listens to them, and then they see the evidence of it. Now, I don't have evidence of that except anecdotal, but what does that mean when I walk into the confessional with my cell phone? Then what does that, there is a question there. That's something important to consider. Bob, Bob, thank you very, very much. I'm going to try to get to another caller if I can this other caller on. Bob, thank you so much for the call and for the very thoughtful remarks and conversation. Dr. Stacey Drasenkos is our guest. I will say that, I can go to the call? All right, David, I don't have a location, but I'm glad you're here. Thanks very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacey Drasenkos.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually north of Silicon Valley out here in San Francisco. So even though I'm not an expert on AI, I pay attention and we get, you know, a lot more discussion of it out here. I personally see that it's more a precursor to the robot world. Out here, I work on energy issues, and the discussion about AI is that it's going to hog electricity. That everybody's going to set their dials to automatically making your coffee machine in the morning, automatically starting your car before you even go outside, you know, everything like that. And it's basically a way for the power companies to produce more electricity. And that said, it very much is tied to the pro-nuclear aspect of electrical generation. If you noticed in the news just a week or so ago, many of the biggest, I think Microsoft and some of the other companies are trying to get Three Mile Island restarted.
David, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I got to get a comment from Dr. Stacy because we're going to run out of time. Is there a particular thing you wanted to comment on?
Well, it's just it's an energy hog method for nuclear to be give themselves self-importance.
Dr. Stacy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, David, thank you and thank the previous caller for bringing these questions up. I think there needs to be a lot more discussion on AI and what it means, because there will come a time when these brain organoids or the AI or something is going to be claimed to have sentience. And we need to know what that means. We need to challenge them on what they mean by it and what we mean by it. And the energy concerns are something I'd never thought of, but like Sai, I'm going to be kept awake by it now. But thank you for bringing this to our awareness. I think we need to have more conversations.
Wonderful conversations, wonderful questions. And I'm actually glad we didn't. I mean, I don't mind talking about evolution, but it usually takes over the hour when we do. And this was a great opportunity for a great variety.
Different kind of evolution.
Can we do this again before the end of the year? I love it when you're here and we get to talk about this good stuff. Was that a yes?
I would love to.
Okay.
Yes, of course.
All right. Well, now we're out of time. Well, thanks, Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. We will see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.